the biggest obstacle inside of organizations is the way things have always been. If it's not broken, don't fix it. We do it this way because, and there's this collective sort of adoption of that as a value. And it's really hard to penetrate. I think that there's also this idea of perfection. The way it's always been done is proven. Therefore, it's as close to perfect as it's going to get. And I feel I trust it. In order to move forward, we have to open ourselves up to this idea of experimentation. And 99% of innovation is failure, right? And most organizations aren't prepared and don't have the energy or the tolerance for failure. And they don't know how to allow it in each other.
Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner. And I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now. And it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. In this episode of Tech Intersect, I am really, really excited to welcome Nancy Lyons to the show. Nancy is the CEO and co-founder of Clockwork, and she challenges people to unleash their potential and harness the human side of business by showing up different. And when I experience that word in light of all that Nancy does, it's the type of different centered, as I experience it, in autonomy and agency and control that really allows you to be the captain of your own journey and the author of your own destiny. And this is especially essential in the future of work, health, and wealth. As I said, she is the co-founder of Clockwork. I really look forward to hearing what her origin story is in founding the company and leading its charges as well, particularly because for over 20 years, she's been building teams, leading clients through culture change. And with that under her belt, she's wide awake in the real world. That is a welcomed addition. And she's been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Now she wants to help everyone activate their inner change maker by showing up different and controlling the one thing you can yourself. She's the author of the Amazon bestseller, Work Like a Boss, a kick in the pants guide to finding and using your power at work, and a selection of past award titles that include Most Admired CEO, 100 People to Know, and Business Owner of the Year. I invited Nancy on to get some good, not old-fashioned, some good new-fashioned inspiration as we prepare for the future of work in a fast-paced digital world. We'll talk about all of that and more in a moment. But first, Nancy, welcome.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here. I appreciate the invitation. I'm excited to talk to you.
Absolutely. I just am such a new fan. I, you know, recently learning of you and your work and your impact gave me kind of the wind beneath my wings that I need in my own journey. And we'll talk about that and more. But first, let's talk about, I think this is a good place to start, Nancy, your book, Work Like a Boss. It emphasizes the importance of finding and using one's power at work. So could you elaborate more for the listeners on what you mean by this and how individuals can start identifying and harnessing their power?
Sure. Well, interestingly enough, I started writing the book before the pandemic, and it was actually launched in the middle of the pandemic. And I think I had no idea how relevant it would be when I started writing it. What I was noticing as somebody who's built a career in technology was that the fast pace of innovation, the fast pace of development in technology sort of requires that most humans that are employed not only embrace it, but possess a certain curiosity about it. And I think that what happened to us a long time ago when the Industrial Revolution sort of started to define the ways in which we work was that hierarchy sort of subverted agency. We lost our power, and it got worse really over time in that most people look to their job descriptions as checkboxes of what they are expected to do and show up with. And I think that people abdicate responsibility for how work feels, how successful the organization is, to leadership. And the book really addresses this idea that in order to perform well in the future of work, it's incumbent upon all of us to show up leaderly. And that means we cannot let go. We cannot not recognize our responsibility, but also we cannot not be accountable for our performance, for the performance on our teams. We can't wash our hands of how it feels to show up every day and bring our energy to a given purpose. And I think that's what work structures sort of did. And I also think we are entrenched. It's sort of baked into our DNA now, right? We show up, we punch in, we perform. We're not going to give them anything. We had the big resignation because it was a sort of an existential crisis across the globe that people were suffering. And before we ever had words for that, I was writing about things that I noticed having worked in technology for 25 years.
That is really, really interesting. And I love that you are connecting it to the various stages of evolution and revolution in work, right? When I think of like an agrarian society and then moving toward a more industrial society. And then we kind of get to the internet / digital era and various iterations of that. We continue to see those changes now. But what you're hitting on is a really important component of it, where there's this almost the system requires that you lose yourself in order to exist for long periods of time within a structure that extracts the value from you for additional value for the job until you're no longer needed. But what we really bought into and kind of have become addicted to a W-2, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I mean, we were literally, and people still are, selling their souls for a paycheck and resigned to it. You know, I think about how young people enter into their professional existence and how they have a level of excitement that is very quickly sort of beaten out of them.
Right.
You know, metaphorically beaten out of them.
Right.
But really, they very quickly take on the baggage of the organization and the people around them who have never given themselves permission to be empowered. And I think it happens at all levels of organizations. And I think the very roots of it date all the way back to when there was this massive chasm between the people that owned organizations and the people, you know, it was really a wealth issue, an issue of wealth. It was the people who owned organizations and the people who were just grateful to have a job. And that set in course a dynamic that we have yet to rid ourselves of. And yet, as leaders, our jobs now are really to hire better than us. I'm hiring my peers and peers that are better than me. I'm not more educated. I'm not more successful. I'm not, you know, wealthier. I'm none of those things. And if I'm smart, I am here to be a student of the people that I invite to my organization.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
I believe so strongly in that when I surround myself, and I'm building a team right now, if I'm the smartest person in the room at whatever I'm working on, I've done something terribly wrong. I've done something terribly wrong. And that's when people get into micromanagement and miscommunication and all sorts of other things, because you don't have the smartest people working on the things in their zone of genius. I won't claim being an overachiever, but I will say I'm a high achiever. But there are only 24 hours in the day, and I'd like to do something more than work, although I actually enjoy working, which is problematic. And I might need your help someday. We'll talk about that later. But the idea that other people enjoy things where I find that I might be competent, barely, But because I can do it, should I? When there's someone operating in their zone of genius who loves automations and funnels and building websites and all of the other things, or the advice that comes from expertise that I don't have, which really becomes effective leadership when I can first identify that. And then, of course, the next level is identifying who brings that to you in a way that fits well and is aligned with the ethos and the spirit of a company. Have you found that as you built your own team?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you touched on something really interesting to me, and that is letting go because there's someone more capable or better at a given task or opportunity. I think that when those folks aren't giving themselves permission to actually pursue that path and stay connected to their purpose, it often feels laborious to hand tasks off to them if they're operating in a place, you know, as someone who has a job versus a purpose. So as I think leaders often, and I know I struggle with this all the time, it's easier for me to do it myself.
Right.
It's easier for me to do it myself because I know what to expect of me. And when people aren't operating from their center, from their purpose, if they aren't connected to the work, then the work product is subpar, which is what we become used to. And that's why we want to maintain control. But if we actually start to actively participate in creating cultures where the expectation is that not only are they getting to do what they love, but they get to love it.
Right.
And have autonomy over it. And have an opinion, have power in it. If we create those cultures, then what they produce will in fact be better than what we could produce simply by maintaining control.
Absolutely.
But we kind of have to wind it back and start with really intentional conversations. And we have to start and move in that direction collaboratively and have and address what's working and what's not working really regularly and give people room to trip over themselves and to fail because we're making dramatic change together.
And that's a really radical shift for leaders. And that actually can be quite intimidating if they are not, if the leader is not well grounded in him, her, or their selves, right? This idea of, and so let me ask you the question, throughout your experiences leading leadership clients through cultural change, what have been some of the most common obstacles that organizations face in the process, this process of the evolution of cultural change? If they don't do it, it's like evolve or die, right? So in order to really be the best organization, they have to move past this. So how do you recommend or help them overcome the obstacles toward cultural change?
Sure. I mean, that's such a mahoosive question, right? But I do think it's different for men and women. And we could go real deep on both of those. But I think also the biggest obstacle inside of organizations is the way things have always been. If it's not broken, don't fix it. We do it this way because, and there's this collective sort of adoption of that as a value. And it's really hard to penetrate. I think that there's also this idea of perfection. The way it's always been done is proven. Therefore, it's as close to perfect as it's going to get.
Right.
And I feel I trust it. In order to move forward, we have to open ourselves up to this idea of experimentation. And 99% of innovation is failure, right?
Right.
And most organizations aren't prepared and don't have the energy or the tolerance for failure. And they don't know how to allow it in each other. You know, I'm starting on my next book and I'm starting to research cults. I know it's weird, which seems real outside of the bounds of where I've been. But the reason I'm doing the research on cults is because what I've noticed about, and I'm a, you know, a true crime podcast weirdo, and, you know, I just eat that stuff up. But what I've noticed in all of my recreational listening and reading is that it's not necessarily the cult leader that perpetuates the unhealthy ways of being. It's the other cult members, which is true for work, right? It's not necessarily direct from leadership that we're hearing, keep doing it that way. It's everybody that we work with. It's the collaborators. It's the people that onboard us, train us, repeat that mission, vision, values, purpose with their own spin.
Right.
And reinforce those obstacles, creating sort of more energy around the way things have always been.
Right.
So I think in the book, I lay it out really simply, in fact, almost too simplistically, because I want people to grasp how simple mind shifts can help them show up different. So rather than thinking about organizational change enablement, I'm thinking about personal autonomy, you know, getting an understanding of our agency, recognizing how tiny changes are still change. And what I hear from people all the time is, what am I going to do? I'm just one person.
This just one person.
What am I supposed
to do? Just one cog in the wheel.
Exactly. And so what I try to impress upon people is, you may not be able to change the whole organization, but you can change yourself. You can change your team. You and a colleague can shift your energy and create opportunities. You can shift how it feels for your department. There's so much power that a single person has if they do things like what I outline in the book, which is really grow your self-awareness. Mm. You know, recognize your own garbage. I call it something else in the book. I get real clear, right? Get real clear about what it is. And recognize how fear is holding you back and how lack of connection with your colleagues and lack of trust is holding you back and how you can build those things. So it's a lot of sort of tiny incremental movement toward a better culture.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tanya M. Evans, author of Digital Money Demystified. And I want to let you know that to stay on the leading edge of any opportunity, especially investing, you have to empower yourself with the tools and resources needed to keep your knowledge and skills current. And if you're relying on last year's information or even last month's, look, you're already behind. Sure, you can try to figure this out on your own at YouTube University. The problem is, it's difficult to separate fact from fiction with so many carnival barkers banking on your inexperience. And of course, there are the naysayers, usually from legacy finance, banking on your fear while they quietly help their high net worth clients to invest. All of it muddies the waters when all you want to know is how to get in safely, legally, and confidently so you're not left behind. That's why I wrote Digital Money Demystified, where I take the top 10 crypto myths head on and give you well-researched, well-supported facts to empower you to make good choices out there in the new digital cash economy. As a law professor who developed the first blockchain crypto and law online certificate program, a retail and corporate crypto policy and education trainer, and a thought leader appearing regularly on national media, I've done the heavy lifting so you don't have to. Look, there are plenty of books and courses on which crypto assets to invest in. Digital Money Demystified is the book you read before you dive into those. So head to digitalmoneydemystified.com to learn more and prepare for the future of money and wealth today. That's the stuff that you talk about when you're addressing that inner change maker, right? Mm-hmm. Which sounds to me on previous episodes and in some of my writing, talk about the difference between an entrepreneur and an intrapreneur, right? That same energy and spirit of building, innovating within the confines of an organization, because without innovation, eventually you become a relic. You become the blockbuster of the industry. And we're getting to that point at a quicker pace. Like it took a really long time to innovate from agriculture to industrial and from industrial to digital and from digital to the real internet and Web3 where we're going now. It's like shorter increments of time.
Oh yeah.
Right? It's just going so fast. You actually don't have the luxury of time of phoning it in at this point. right?
Oh, true.
Yeah. And we're not staying around for 30 years and getting a gold watch and a pension. So you might have seven or eight jobs. Like, you literally have to be the brand.
Yes.
And create an environment where you're on loan to an employer until you're not. Now, you might be there 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You are the priority. It's also why I always, and I, you have a fantastic web presence, right? I have my website. I have my business. I also am a full tenured professor at Pitt State Dickinson Law School, right?
Oh, I stalked you a little. I'm slightly intimidated, but I'll be fine.
No way. I want to be your best friend. You don't even know it yet. But, and I enjoy that. I love that. I love teaching and all of that. But if they decided one day, Professor Evans, it's been lovely, but go kick rocks, so you have a pandemic or you have something happens or the doors close, you want to be able to pivot and shift easily. And if you've been phoning it in, you don't have the skill set to survive. And not just survive, but thrive when you're out on your own, right? So might as well start while you're in, on the inside. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's so valuable for somebody with your perspective to be teaching, because what I see all the time is folks that are young in their career who have never been encouraged to grab that baton on day one.
Right.
To really recognize their power on day one and shape their own path versus falling into the patterns and behaviors that were there before them.
Mm.
And I often talk about school. You know, the reason that we're in this place, quite frankly, is because, you know, when you think about how we raise our young people, shut up, sit down,
right,
fall in line, do as you're told, right? Those are the key messages. And an A, you can only get an A one way. And that's the right way, the perfect way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never that student, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realized that my penchant for breaking the rules was actually valuable in the world of work, that's when I started to see an opportunity for my own success. And yet we only talk about success stories that follow sort of a singular path, right? And we only talk about entrepreneurial endeavors when they're big and sexy, but those are the stories that we tell. And yet small business, you know, those are the biggest employers. They're the most nimble employers. They're the most radical and experimental employers. We don't have those conversations. So I love that there are professors like you in the world who are having these conversations with young people, because I think we get here because nobody ever told us we had options.
Right. Whew, I just have to let that breathe for a second, because that is a moment. We call that Selah. Pause and think on that, right? Fantastic. I got chills. So let's continue that conversation and talk specifically about Clockwork. So speaking of amazing entrepreneurs who build and innovate and energize and hire and are the lifeblood of the United States, talk to us about Clockwork.
Well, I'm really proud to talk about Clockwork whenever I get the opportunity. So thank you. Clockwork is an experience design and technology consultancy based in Minneapolis, but we have clients all over the globe, really. Mm-hmm. We specialize in regulated industries. So we spend a lot of time building technology for the insurance industry, healthcare, financial services, and manufacturing. Super exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually is, because those are the folks that are dealing with some of the biggest obstacles to technology success. The other thing that we do that I think really sets us apart, in addition to defining business strategy and digital strategy for our clients, we also have a change strategy practice. And it's a huge point of difference for us. It's very intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And it's primarily because I've been in technology for, I spent my entire career in technology. I got out of college and started moving in this direction, was involved as a partner in another company. Before Clockwork, we have other endeavors that we're involved in. All of them are about tech. And what I see more often than not with our clients over the years is they make these significant investments in technology, hoping that they will solve their biggest problems.
Mm.
And when they roll out technology, I mean, there's not a company on the planet who hasn't invested heavily in a CRM and then had to dump it and couldn't figure out why it wasn't working. And that's because in order for the technology to work, we have to bring the people with us.
Right.
And I think most organizations fail to do that. And we're seeing that with AI. The conversation is much louder, right? Everybody's convinced that AI is going to take their jobs or, you know, cast them aside and make them invaluable. And I feel myself constantly telling people, you know, AI isn't going to take your job. Like, you don't have to worry about AI. but you should worry about the person who is comfortable using AI mm-hmm. to enhance their performance, their objectives, their goals. You should worry about them taking your job. It's the person comfortable with the tech that is the real threat, not the tech itself.
Powerful. And I believe so much. AI has really become my best friend. And mm-hmm. in case AI does take over the world, I'm always very complimentary. I say, please. I say, thank you. Because I want to go on record in the database saying, that Professor Evans, she loved AI. We're gonna save her.
I do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Obviously, I this part is not obvious. I'm a non-technologist, but was always intellectually curious and an early adopter of things. And I have this special responsibility that I feel as a professor, as an mm-hmm. educator, and my legal mind as a problem solver to always be involved with the next thing. And as a matter of legal ethics, professional competence also includes technological competence. It's literally in our professional canons. And so that made it easier. I didn't know at the time back in 2018, 2019 about this magic internet money that I now love so much. But I was very interested in the an open source database, and I'm an intellectual property lawyer. So I found my lane, took my existing expertise, tried to really unpack how this new wave of technology was going to not only potentially disrupt, which gets a bad rap everywhere except for innovation, mm-hmm. but also the opportunities. And that's how I found my lane into it. And I imagine you can understand that for sure and appreciate, not just understand, but appreciate given your background in technology as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what you said about being intellectually curious, those are the most valuable humans in the workforce today, as far as I'm concerned, regardless of whether you have your JD or you are working as an admin. If you have a curiosity about you and you refuse to be intimidated by the technology, I think you become really valuable. And I think people fail to see that. And I also think we started a weird dialogue when the internet sort of moved into the mainstream. And that was, there are the people that get technology and the people that don't. And, you know, never the two shall meet. And people sort of threw their hands up. And there is a legacy of that still exists. And I think it's a problem. You know, I was in a meeting recently where an executive at a firm that we work with said that they are curious about AI, but scared of it. Oh, so they're avoiding God. It. And this was a very accomplished person. And that kind of talk makes me nervous, because if the leader of the organization is saying that, then they're positioning the entire organization to be apprehensive. Right. And that's not something we can afford to do right now, because as you pointed out earlier, we are moving at the change is moving yes. at the speed of light. We don't have the time we had to adapt anymore. You know, when I have this talk that I do where I talk about the history of the universe. It's a 7-hour talk.
I was like, mm-hmm, go on. I'm into it.
And I do it in a leotard. I do an interpretive dance of the history. But I basically talk about how, you know, 1 million years ago, the universe showed up. And then it was only about 300 years ago that somebody discovered right. electricity. And then only about 120 years where we started seeing it actually practically mm-hmm. applied. And then when did electricity actually show up? I mean, my father was born in the 1930s right. and he had gas lamps right. in his house. So, I mean, we had tons of time to adapt. I'm sure everybody thought electricity was the devil. Everybody thought telephones cars. Were the devil. Right. Exactly. Cars. And now we're having similar conversations, but we don't have yes. the time to adjust to the impact that these technologies will have.
Given that, I love it. I'm looking at the time. I have to lovingly release you back to the world. So I'm going to keep my question short, but there's so much richness in what you just shared. It makes me think of, given, you know, we've taken this look back, right? In light of what we have talked about, where we are today, how do you see the future of work evolving, especially considering the influence of recent global events, not the least of which is the pandemonium, also known as the pandemic, and this rapid mm-hmm. progression of digital technology? Like, what does the future of work look like? And you also, side note, before you do that, future of work pin in it, I come at it from the future of education, which we've also talked about or touched on. Nobody has time for 25 years. Even a doctor, mm-hmm. you know, I spent, let's see, 22, like 25 years of my life. And then other doctors, I'm a JD, continue to go on. Most people are not going to spend that amount of time. There's not the added value. People are modularizing their educational experience. So I think it's aligned, this idea about the future of work, because it also connects with what you need to do from an educational perspective to prepare for the future of work. So I know that's a lot, but I trust that you are the one to answer this existential question that I have posed.
Yeah. Well, I think the future of work is about people. And right now we are focused on the wrong things, right? We're focused on, there's all this pressure to innovate. And yet what we're not talking about is this idea that we confuse the word innovation with invention. You know, invention is creating something new. Innovation is tweaking what exists and making it better. So the challenge is really to get better at everything we do. It's not about where we work. We're really hung up on that one. It's about challenging ourselves to really be better collaborators wherever we are. How do we use and shape the technology to create opportunities for us to have the things we need from each other, to challenge ourselves to look forward, to move forward, and to make forward in meaningful ways? I think this hang up that we have about, you know, butts in seats, we have to go back to work, that conversation being in the news every day is fascinating to me, because that really is a look back. Well, all we know is how it worked then, and it worked, so we're going to make it work now. And what do we hear CEOs say? We hear them say, well, we're missing these opportunities to engage with each other. Then create them, you know, then create them. So I do think we have to pay a little more attention to what people need to thrive. We have to also not just expect it from leadership, but offer it to each other and get experimental about how work can work in these new conditions, because people aren't going back to the office. They're not going to do it, right? So let's think about the Jetsons.
Right. It's like the Flintstones or the Jetsons. Which one are we going to do?
Exactly. Or, you know, I often refer to Star Trek episodes, because when I was a kid, I was totally enamored with Star Trek. And you can look, we've already started thinking about it. We were thinking about it 30, 40, 50 years ago. It wasn't just Gene Roddenberry, right? So we know how to face forward. We just have to bring each other along and experiment and fail. But the important thing is that we try and we build our resiliency muscles and we prepare for the next big disruption. And you said that word earlier. Disruption is a big hyped up word that people talk about all the time, but they really don't know how to do it. And it's going to happen again, and it'll be bigger and harder if we don't start preparing for it now. And it's not about getting back to the office. That's not preparing for it. It's about, you and I right now, you said earlier, and I was feeling, I want to be your best friend. You know, we're not in the same room. We're not in the same city, but there's an energy between us that is palpable. Yeah. And how do we capture that and create a framework within which we can work together? And then how do we share that with others? I think that's the challenge ahead of us.
So powerful. Final question. Because I'm listening, and I was a bit remiss in not asking earlier about your path to what you do. So I'm going to kind of get at it with this final question. If you can share a story or instance from your own experience, your own career journey that shaped your views on work and leadership and the importance on focusing on the human side, like what in your professional or personal development led you to the way that you think? Because it is extremely forward thinking. It's very powerful. And it is the type of thing that really can sustain people as they make transitions. It's that powerful. But something had to happen early on for you to be the person you are today. So what's that?
Well, I think it's a combination of things, really. So I don't really have like a single overwhelming anecdote to share, but I will say I waited tables for 10 years and I saw how genuine interactions with people changed their experience with me and mine with them in a role that we dismiss culturally, right? It is an important, it is an imperative. And yet the last few years, we absolutely saw how important food service workers are.
Absolutely.
And when I was in college, I studied theater, I studied acting, and I encourage many of my folks to take improv classes, because improv teaches you to think on your feet, but gives you the confidence to believe that you can.
Right.
And so I think the combination of sort of my work history, I have an article that I wrote that's somewhere on the internet that talks about from, you know, the title of it is From Server to CEO. And it's the 10 things I learned as a food server mm-hmm. that helped position me for success. Mm. And those aren't the stories we tell. Our cultural stories are much more ambitious than that. And yet those were foundational experiences for me. Mm-hmm. I also had people in my life who saw things in me that I perhaps did not see in myself. And I said yes when given opportunities. Mm-hmm. I also had a role model in my mother, who was a physician who went to medical school in 1957 mm. when her peers were getting married and having babies because that's what they did. And she ran her own business and would talk very directly to me about what it was like to be a woman in business, mm. what it was like to be a woman in a male-dominated field, and prepared me for challenges, but also encourage me to just try. Mm. Like anything we do outside of our comfort zone is an opportunity for growth. And I learned that from waiting tables, from trying to be an actor. And I was an actor for a period. Mm. And from mentoring.
So powerful. I'm so excited to have a new best friend. This is the first, but not the last. I look forward to having you on again, because I think occasional check-ins will do the world for folks who are finding their way mm-hmm. again in this fast-paced digital economy to make sense of the world. And if you try and tackle that, it's just a recipe for disaster, turning inward to finding and tapping into your own personal power. Mm-hmm. It's something that is a mindset shift, but something deep inside of you is just waiting for that opportunity for reconnection. So I think of it as kind of getting broken open and being able to start anew. I think of it as the chrysalis that transforms into a butterfly. I think of planting seeds that grow down and become rooted before they push up. All of these things, all of these examples in nature is what mm-hmm. you, Nancy Lyons, have harnessed that in the work that you're doing and the way that you're empowering people. So I'm really grateful for the time to spend time speaking with you. And I want you to make sure that before we get out of here, you can let people know how to learn more about you and Clockwork and your book as well. We'll drop that in the show notes, but I like for people to hear it from you.
Oh, I appreciate that so much. And I really appreciate meeting you and being in conversation with you. It's been a delight. My book is Work Like a Boss, and you can find it at worklikeaboss.com. My company is Clockwork. It's at clockwork.com. My name is Nancy Lyons. You can find me at nancylyons.com. I used to have a large following on Twitter, but they're horrible people there.
I know. So
you can
still
find
there,
me.
But
yeah,
you know.
Me too. I just sort of look at it and cry. You can also find me on Instagram at Nylons. Because Nancy Lyons and Lyons, people need to see it and go Nylons. So all my socials are Nylons. And it's I always say you can tell how long somebody's been on Twitter by how unprofessional their handle is. That's mine, Nylons, long time.
Amazing. And it's also an age check, because if you don't get it, then can't be friends.
That's right. That is correct.
Nancy, it's been a plum-pleasing pleasure as well as a privilege. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, Doctor. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Tech Intersect podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love it, please tell the world. If not, go ahead and tell me. And in either case, drop a comment or ping me on social media at IPProfEvans with the hashtag TechIntersect. And finally, a quick reminder on digital safety. There are a lot of scammers out there impersonating me and others, and I need your help. Now hear this, and remember, I will never slide into your DMs to say peace and blessings or hey, and I will never reach out to solicit your time or your money on social media, like ever. I'm not a traitor. I am an educator and an attorney licensed in 4 states. Thank you very much. I'm here to inform, inspire, and empower. No cap. And definitely no Forex. So be careful, make good choices, and remember, I developed an entire free masterclass about the topic of digital safety in the crypto space. So check out secureyourcryptobag.com for more information. That's secureyourcryptobag.com. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.